You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Like, if I'm wiping their nose, fine. But if they bring it to me, I will scream.
Disgusting. I can watch, like, a dead body be, like, you know.
I know.
That's so gross.
Ooh, that dead body has a booger.
I'm Alex Higley.
And I'm Lindsay Hunter.
And I'm a writer.
But... Welcome to I'm a Writer, But with us tonight is Amber Sparks. And, you know, I just said tonight, but when you're listening, it could be any time of the day. Amber Sparks is the author of I Do Not Forgive You, Revenges and Other Stories, The Unfinished World and Other Short Stories, May We Shed These Human Bodies, and is the co-author of The Desert Places. She lives in Washington, D.C. with two beasts and two humans, and she lives online at AmberNoelleSparks.com or at AmberNoelle with two L's and an E on Twitter. Welcome, Amber.
Welcome.
We want you to read, but before you read, I just wanted to read a tweet that you put out tonight that I really related to, and I think everyone will. And it was, no one should have to make dinner on a pandemic Sunday. And I truly feel that in my heart and soul, especially after my daughter upended her plate on the table and refused to eat anything. And I just want to thank you for that truth in these tough times. What are you going to read to us tonight?
I'm going to read, let's see. Oh, I think I'll read Rabbit by Rabbit because it's actually one that I don't usually read. So.
Yay.
But it's vaguely related to, you know, the topic at hand of being many things.
Yes.
Besides just a writer. Rabbit by Rabbit. The girl is drinking red wine in the nursery. She is pregnant. She is languid. She is huge and hazy and full of vague hopes for the future. She is populating a dollhouse for her child, figure by figure, family member by family member. The house is a painstaking replica of her own, built by her husband before he marched off to battle. The dolls are her dreams, each a tableau of future children and future wishes, none of which will exactly come true. The father of this baby has just been shot for desertion and will not return from this war or any other. She will go into labor with her hands round the letter, ink smeared and soft smudges over her swollen palms. Many years later, she will ask her grandchildren, "Was that one war or two ago? A husband or several?" She will be possessed by then of the magic of forgetting. Rabbit by rabbit, the past will go into the hat. In will go husbands, children, lovers, friends, streetcars, swimming, low-heeled shoes, high-neck dresses, strawberry pies, fortune tellers at the fair, hay bales and harpsichords and half-baked schemes she dreamt up when she was a little girl. In will go lamps and doorstops and baking bread and chimneys and pipe smoke and paintings and symphonies and stars. In will go all the words for these things, or most of them anyway. And by the time she meets her first great-granddaughter, she will not even remember the word for love. but she will still have the dollhouse, worn through and tumbled, dolls with no faces and walls dark with handprints. She will spend the most of her time with it, moving from room to room as if she were a doll, forehead pressed against the clouded glass windows. She will wait and dream instructions from the dolls inside. She will wonder at their threadbare clothes and understand the memory of love collects here somehow. Rabbit by rabbit, into the hat, pictures, people, machines, all will accelerate and eventually pursue one another with frantic, herky-jerky upstarts, flickering in and out of range, start in sepia tones, progress to perfect technicolor saturation. The memory, next, of traumas, self and the world's, everything that burns, her two sons to fever, her daughter to a strange cult and a series of feverish marriages and too many children she didn't quite love, maps to gone, so no path can be left to trace through this wreckage. A young, good life, spent tan, spent cycling, spent golfing, tennis lessons at Biarritz with the nice young man with this pro, the pet spiders, a neck long and swan-like, her admirers astonished, a beige blur behind the sudden brilliance of her boyfriend, he, the soldier in scarlet, she, the grieving widow, beautiful and child-laden, the Madonna in black brocade. Then, childbirth, always a swollen breast, always a husband somewhere off in the middle distance with a paper and a pipe, a lake house, a black lace dress, then he, her favorite husband. He'll teach her to shoot, to jump nude into a fountain and swim in jazz, to fly from a window, fly into a needle, squander, squander, squander joy until you've used up all your teeth and laughter, all flown, all gone, all stuffed like colorful crepe streamers into the magic hat. After, the world gone gray at first, then faded to silver, still mechanical in its new and dreamless age. Her first glimpse of the great structures. She'll shimmy up in denim overalls and stand at the vanishing point. She'll pity the world below, pontilistic, vague, and undefined. Into the hat, the flying machines. To be dissolved. The long nights, alone in dark clubs, and alone in dark bars, and alone in dark bedrooms, trying desperately to find light. To be dissolved. The visits from grandchildren, hesitant and shy. The smell of young skin, too much memory in that downy scent, but always enough love, always hands in the dollhouse, always more figures needed. Finally, tragedy, finally, weeping, finally, the memory of man's hubris, the iceberg, the bomb, the burn, always lurking to fill the trenches, the beaches, the ovens, the jungles, the deserts, the hubris that will eat up trees and children and even the dead with relish, the way man will peel history like an onion or sometimes just drill a hole right through. The men, the last to go, the men, the collective men, and she will finally do the leaving for once. She's held to them for too long, given them too much place of importance in her whole long life history. No more. She will press her old frame to the rotting roof of the dollhouse, finally emptied, hollow, and ready to enter. Her own old face will be nearly gone, a smear of red for lips, two smears of bleary blue for eyes. Her clothes will be simple and coarse, her head a wooden O. She'll push and push through until those long ago rooms are hers again, until she finds a new set of stages for a new set of lives. She'll push until she finds herself in a child's palm, a new small vessel for dreaming someone else's dreams. But now, in this moment, she puts down her wine. She lowers her huge, tired frame to the floor and she smiles, puts her hand on her belly and imagines the strange small vessel inside. She tells herself, remember this, remember it all.
Damn, you are such a good reader.
Well, you want to know a funny thing about that is a huge portion of how I learned to read was by listening to you, Lindsay.
Me?
I'm not even kidding.
Are you serious?
Yes, yes. What? I had to do this like really this reader voice you know, the boring, you know,
oh, yes.
like
oh, yes.
reader voice. And I remember I heard like you and Amelia Gray read at AWP or something, and was, oh my God, you can do that. You can just like it was this piece I think about the apocalypse or something, and you just like yelled, like yelled the whole thing, and I was like, oh my God, you can do that. That's amazing. I want to do that.
yes, so, I remember doing that. Yep, my story after, which I think is in Don't Kiss Me. Dang, yeah, thank you. Yeah. Thank you for saying that.
No, thank you. Yeah, I seriously, like, you know, there's so many really great readers, and I'm always, and you guys are, you and Amelia are totally the ones that I always mention off the top of my head to, like, people who, you know, complain about boring reading. Like, you don't have to be boring.
No, remember Amelia, I think she performed it, I don't remember if it was that one, but she before Threats was a novel, she used to read the story that Threats is based on, and she would just throw the pieces of paper, the threats, at people.
Yes, it was so good.
It was really good.
So
yeah. I'm really glad you said that, Amber, because I brought up on one of these ones recently, I said to Lindsay, I was like, you don't understand, I have to read with Lindsay Hunter every week, so it's like I have to bring it. So Jesus,
I miss reading so much. I really, like, I miss it a lot.
Yes, I do too. Oh my gosh, I love it.
Yes, yes. Did you came from a performer, like, theater background, didn't you?
Yeah, I was a theater major, so.
Yes, yeah, see, we're putting that to good use.
Yeah, that makes all the difference, doesn't it?
It really does.
It's not, you know, everyone's like, oh my God, it's like so scary getting up there and reading my stuff. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I don't have to memorize it. That's great.
Yeah, I like to be like, yeah, I'm so scared too. And then I just go up there, like, work all my shit out. Like, no, I'm exactly. an extrovert. Okay.
I'm not, but I that was one of the things I liked about theater. It was because I could be extroverted, like, up on the stage. It was like a weird, you know, Jekyll and Hyde type thing.
So. Your safe space.
Yes, exactly.
You know what I wanted to ask you is, like, before you had kids and you were thinking, before you had your daughter and you were thinking about having a child, and now versus now, like, when you were thinking, okay, I'm a writer and I also have, you know, I'm a full-time worker, but I want to have a child. What were you envisioning your writing life to be versus what it is now? Like, is it wildly different than you were thinking? Like, what did you have to do to make it, you know, into what it is?
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't think I was ever, like, I ever, like, properly appreciated how much time a child would take up in your life. Because, you know, I it's not like I was like, oh yeah, I'll be totally fine. I'll, you know, have tons of time. But, you know, I sort of, I was kind of a person who had like largely given up my social life to write, mm-hmm. For the most part, you know, I like 30. And so, you know, I thought, oh, okay, I'll be fine. I'll still have a lot of time. And then, you know, when Izzy was born, I was like, I think the other thing that was really surprising to me too, wasn't just time. Cause, you know, you can sort of make time. You can figure that out. I mean, sort of, kind of, but, you know, my brain, I don't know if this happened to you, but my brain, like, died after Izzy was born for like maybe 2 years, I think, like, mm-hmm. just literally was dead. I was like, I could like read and stuff and like, you know, but like, I couldn't write. I was just like totally intellectually brain dead.
Absolutely. And I remember fighting against that so hard. Like, I would force myself in these like endless, like, boring, laborious writing sessions. And I could never like get to the end of a story. And I like, but I just refused to accept that. Like, I refused to give myself the time to be brain dead, you know? And like you, like, I was still reading, you know, and, but it really, I think it was about the same time frame was like, okay. Like, after 2 years had passed, it was like, I had enough of myself to give, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I just, you know,
wondered about that.
Yeah.
It's so, like, it's so, you know, cause I was, you know, breastfeeding for like 2 years mm-hmm. and then I was, or something almost like that. I think actually it was over 2 years. And then, and you know, obviously you're like, you have no sleep for like, mm-hmm. you know, you're not getting any actual sleep or quality sleep. And, you know, I don't know if there, and you have all these like hormones still coursing through you. And I have no idea if that, like, if that's what it is or not, but I feel like I've heard that from a lot of people that your brain is just like sort of, you know,
yeah. I mean,
you're useless for a while.
Your brain chemistry totally changes. And I think also, like, and this happened to me every time with every child, I underestimated like how much sleep would matter. Like, I just thought like, mm-hmm. I know I'm going to be tired, but I'm always tired. La, 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 you know, but then it's like, oh no, I didn't remember how tired I was going to be.
Right. Right. It makes a huge difference.
I noticed you said something on Twitter the other day where you were saying, you know, like before the pandemic, like a bad writing day was just like a bad writing day, but now it just feels like the stakes are so high. I know that's not exactly what you said, but.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's exactly right. I mean, it's, and I think it was funny because it was sort of like, I think some people that didn't have kids were like, what are you, I don't know what you're talking about, but,
right.
But because, you know, we've got our kids with us 24/7 now, and there's like no time anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, the little time that I have, like, I'm, you know, really lucky. I try to write at night when I can, but like, for the most part, my big chunks of writing are weekly. My husband and I actually split up the weekend. So mm-hmm. he takes Sunday, he gets Sunday, I get Saturdays, and we can, like, you know, make what we will of those days. And the other mm-hmm. one of us, like, takes Izzy duty. And so, you know, on Saturdays, like, God, this last Saturday, yesterday, I had, like, you know, 7 hours to write or whatever it was. And, wow. you know, that's my one writing time per week, pretty much, where I can be really productive. And it just sucked. And I was so mad. Mm. Like, God damn it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, it feels like this, it, that's exactly what you said. The stakes are so much higher now. Whereas before I'd be like, okay, well, you know, I'll just write on my lunch break. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I used to write all the time, like on my commute or at lunch. Like a lot of people. And now it's like, I'm making lunch. I can't actually write, or I don't have a commute anymore. So the one real time that I have is sort of that Sunday, which can be great or terrible.
When you're having a rough writing day, Amber, are you the kind of person that's just sitting there grinding it out? Or do you kind of eject and say, all right, it's not happening today? How do you approach days like that?
You know, in the past, I would have been a person who just ejected before I had a kid. But now I just grind it out because mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, this is my only time. So I got to do it. I'm lucky that I've, you know, got a couple of projects going on that I'm working on. So like, if the novel, because the main one that I'm working on is this godforsaken novel. And so if the novel sucks, which it usually does, then I can like switch over to the like nonfiction book and work on that. Or I can work on an essay, or, you know, there's like other stuff that I can work on. So like, right. I usually try to at least have some backup plans that like,
is that how you usually work? Is you have a bunch of different like balls in the air, or is this sort of newer?
No, I always do. Yeah. I'm like, it's like how I just, it's like my personality. It's just how I am.
Mm-hmm.
I get really bored when I'm just working on one thing.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been working on the novel? I ask you that because you called it Godforsaken, and I figured that meant it's been a long time.
Yeah. It's been a long time. Like maybe 2 years, I think. About two and a half years. So it's been a while. I'm really hoping to finish it like this summer. That's
yay. Okay. That's just right around the corner.
Yeah, it's coming up. I was gonna say that's good.
I will see. I've already written two other novels that ended up like going in the trash can, and then a third that turned into a novella. So we'll see.
I think that can surprise some newer writers, or, you know, like, I feel like people don't understand like how many novels get written that never see the light of day, you know, that just kind of like, okay, well, I got that out of my system.
I that's what kills me. Like, I don't know about you guys, but like for, since, you know, I write short stories primarily, it's like, you know, if I work on a short story and it sucks, it's like, okay, well, I spent, you know, weeks or months, not like 2.5 years working on that short story. So it's just, it feels like, I think that's another part of the reason I always like have to be working on something else when I'm working on a novel. Cause otherwise it's just, you know, this, again, the stakes are too high.
Stakes are too high. Yep.
If this sucks, then I will have just, you know, destroyed 2.5 years of my creative life. Mm.
So scary.
Yeah. I never think when I'm writing a short story, like, why am I writing this? Like, why does this exist? But with a novel, I feel like everyone who's ever written even part of one has definitely had those moments where it's like, why the fuck does this exist? Like, what am I doing? I have answer.
It won't let you just walk away from it, right? Like it's, you can't just be like, well, that's done. You just have to be like, oh, I have to just.
Exactly. And I have this, I'm at the point now where I really like am invested in my characters and I really care about them, which.
Oh, that's like, such a good sign. Really,
yeah.
A good sign, but it also sucks because I'm like, well, now I'm truly in this weirdo fantasy world, like where I'm really committed to this thing.
Weirdo fantasy world. Like, oh, I can't wait to read it.
The really funny part about it is, you know, it's actually a pretty claustrophobic novel, in a lot of ways, and which did not. And I started writing it, you know, way before the pandemic. So it wasn't because of that at all, but the pandemic has actually suited it fairly well because it really like lends itself to a feeling of being stuck at home all the time.
Wow. So everything happens like for a reason.
Yeah,
you know that,
yeah.
That tweet that went around that was like, what did you do to cause the pandemic? That's what you did. You started writing that novel.
Oh no, I wrote a novel about an agoraphobic.
Yes, there you go. This is your fault. This is all your fault. This novel better be published. What made you want to write a novel? I know that's like something I'm thinking about my personal experience when I wrote stories primarily. And then, you know, there was pressure to write a novel and I wasn't sure I even wanted to do that. You know, like what about the form was attractive to you as a, you know, a short story writer?
Mostly just that I'm a really stubborn asshole. And I just really was like, I just want to like see if I can do this.
Yeah.
And prove that I can. Cause, you know, I don't know. It was, yeah. And then I, you know, couldn't. And then I was like, well, that's not acceptable. So I'm just gonna have to keep trying. So yeah, just really like sheer cussedness, which is really not a good reason to like do anything creatively.
Honestly, what better reason is there than to just be like, I am gonna do this if it's the last thing I do.
That's so true. What other things could I say? Money.
Yeah. We're all so rich and famous on the novel side.
No. I don't know. Why did you guys write novels?
Alex,
I mean, honestly, I think for, I'll field that one. I think probably for the same reason, Amber, honestly, just like, I thought of myself as a short story writer, and that was what I always was, I feel like I was reading probably like way, way, way more short story collections, and it was what I was thinking about. But yeah, I mean, eventually you reach a point and everyone around you that has any idea of what you're doing is kind of asking the question. I feel like, okay, yeah. So when are you going to write a novel or even just, you know, I don't know if this is your experience, but certainly with friends of mine that are not writers, but are that like, you know, are supportive and, you know, maybe want to read something here and there that you write, their investment in short stories is like just basically non-existent. I feel like it's like, you know, it's like taking someone who's never heard jazz to a jazz club and sitting them like tying them to a chair or something. It's like, this isn't going to work. So I don't know. I just feel like ultimately you reached a point, like you said, it's like, all right, let's do this. Come on.
Yeah. And I feel like that was definitely when I wrote my first novel, it was exactly that. It was like, let's see if we can do this, you know, let's do this. LOL. But now like, I can't get away from it. You know, like I have a collection that I wrote, that I've been writing for the past few years, and it's finished, but like, I'm still writing novels, you know? And it's like, I never thought that would be the case.
You're locked into novels right now for sure. I feel like that when we talk, like you're thinking novels right now. That's where your head's been at, I feel like.
Definitely. I mean, I'm writing one right now. So that's, and the last one I wrote, I was writing stories at the same time. So I guess it was a little similar to how you work, Amber, because it felt like, it was like the form of a short story was like necessary to tinker with while I was working on this overarching structure of the novel that I was writing. And it also kept things fresh for me, but I haven't really been doing that. I think because I don't have time.
Yeah, that's a big part. Mm-hmm. No, that's true. This is the first time that I have not been, I mean, that's how I've written like my last couple of short story collections is while I was writing a novel. So This is the first time that I haven't been doing that. Because I just, I don't have the time to be doing both. So see how that goes.
One day, allegedly this fall, if kids can go back to school, all three of my kids will be in school for some portion of the day. And I cannot fathom that.
Mm. Amazing.
Like I've been a mom for 8 years and I've never had that. I can't believe I'm about to graduate into that life.
Man. Will Judith be in pre-K or?
She'll go to like half day pre-K. So it won't be major, but it'll be like 3 hours to myself.
That's major.
Totally major.
I think I'm just going to lay spread eagle naked on my bed for that entire 3 hours and do nothing productive with my time.
That's ready.
Mm-hmm. I definitely fantasize about having the house to myself, like a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. A lot.
Or just like the bathroom to yourself.
Oh, that'd be great. That's not allowed in my house.
Yeah.
No, our house either. I should really put a lock on it one of these days. But
we finally have a lock on our basement bathroom door, but all that does is enrage them. Throw themselves against the door. Yeah. Right. What are you doing? When are you going to be done?
Oh my God.
Like I'm writing.
I was going to say, do your kids like respect your writing time at all? Or is that just like, ha ha ha.
I really like, I talk to them very frankly about it and they know like when I'm sitting down to write. And like, I can remember, like last year when I was, or 2 years ago when I was writing the previous novel and I would be putting my little ones down for nap. And I would tell Towns, my middle child, like, I gotta go. Cause I have to go write. I have to go to work. I have some work to do and I have to do this. And I would just be very upfront and frank with him about it because I want them to know that about me. Like I want them to know. So, I would say that I'm usually writing when they're asleep or, you know, like otherwise occupied. So they don't really have to respect it because they don't even see it happening. But I am very like open with them about everything. So, I mean, Parker's disappointed that I'm not rich, famous, and that I haven't won any awards.
Yeah. Yeah. There's
that. He's like my id.
Amber, do you get asked all the time during the pandemic to write something about living in DC during this period?
No, actually, I don't think
I'm surprised. I am so shocked. That was like the thing I was thinking about most coming into talking to you. I was like, I wonder if she just gets asked all the time to write about what it's like to be in DC during the pandemic.
Yeah, no, nobody's really asked me that. I mean, people, you know, people ask me how what it's like or whatever.
Right.
Write it. So
consider this us asking you to write
this.
That.
Is exactly like, what the hell? I feel like that is what I want to read from you. I was like, I would love to just know. I don't know. I just feel like everything I'm seeing on the news to be there in it in a different way, I honestly cannot even imagine.
I don't know. The weird thing is I don't feel like it's any different than anybody else's experience, or at least for me. Like, you know, because we're pretty like isolated. We both work from home. Thank God we're lucky to be able to do that. So like, Izzy goes to school at home. It's really, we hardly even like go out. We hardly go outside, you know?
No,
like,
sure. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not, we're not really like, I don't know. It feels weird. I mean, I talked to a lot of, I imagine this is the same thing actually for Chicago, but I talked to a lot of friends, you know, who are in New York and it's kind of the same thing. You don't, feel like you even live in this like big city anymore. You just, you're just like in your little, you know, your bubble, your little neighborhood. And that's, I don't really go anywhere else. So yeah, the only thing that was weird was, and scary obviously was the whole insurrection part of things.
Right.
That was creepy. And not even because like I personally was scared, because, you know, I live in a fourth floor of an apartment building. I wasn't like worried they were coming in here, but it just felt creepy. Cause like I normally in non-pandemic times, I work about, I work like literally right next to the White House.
Oh, wow.
My building is like right there. So it was just like, there's something like really weird and creepy about, I was talking to some other people about this, but like, you know, when you live in DC, there's a sort of weird security trade-off that you have where you like basically encounter police and security like all the time. Mm. or like you accidentally like, you know, ride your bike down a specific alley or something, and all of a sudden like 10 like armed cops show up.
Oh my gosh.
And they're like, you can't go this way. And you're like, oh God, I'm sorry. Okay. But you sort of like put up with all the security theater because you're like, well, it's the nation's capital. They're protecting us. So that was just really scary and disorienting, because it was like, well, what the hell did we do all that for all these years when like they could just like walk into the Capitol?
Bust right in.
Yeah. So, but I feel, you know, already having Biden there makes me feel safer, because I know that there's not like a literal enemy of our, you know,
mm-hmm.
our country,
oh,
like
my God.
White House. So that's kind of exciting. Like someday when I go back to work, I will actually like be able to look at the White House and not just feel loathing and shame. I would take Izzy to work with me sometimes, you know, like on days where I had to pick her up early from school or whatever. And I'd bring her to work, and we'd walk past the White House, and she'd be like, don't look up. I was like, why not? Because like, Donald Trump might be looking out of a window at us.
Oh.
So I'd be like, okay, we don't have to worry about that anymore.
I was going to ask you, what's the nonfiction book that you're working on?
It's a proposal about for a book, nonfiction book about like pop culture around ghosts.
Oh, wow.
Around the topic of ghosts.
Oh, that's like, so perfect movies, for you.
Yeah, so TV, movies, like really like modern pop culture. Because it was actually really weird. I was like looking, I was trying to research an essay like a year ago or so, and I started looking, and I could not find anything that was really about the way that we talk about and think about and use ghosts as like cultural currency in like sort of our modern culture. And so I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll just write that book. So I'm like working on the proposal right now, which is interesting process that I hate very much.
Well, I was going to say, how does it feel writing a proposal when you have, you know, you're a fiction writer. I mean, you usually you're used to writing the whole thing and turning it in. Is it in some ways more fun though? Like to just be, to have this and think like, okay, potentially I could have a deal and not even have the thing written yet.
Yeah. 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 It's sort of both. It's like, that is sort of an exciting possibility. But it's also really hard because, you know, when you're obviously, when you're a fiction writer, you write the book and people either like want to buy the book or they don't want to buy the book.
Right.
And that's, you know, really it. And it's based on the strength of the writing. And I'm not super great. I do a fair amount of freelance, but I'm really, really bad at like pitches and like actually selling the idea. So, you know, it's been really hard for me because I'm like, well, people should just like buy it if they want to buy it. Describe it, like, you know, I shouldn't have to talk about it.
And, don't you feel like that's true for like your own book publicity too? Like I feel like anytime I've had a book come out, I've been like, well, what do you want me to do? Like if they like me, then they'll read it. And I feel like, you know, like we have to sort of be these like weird hype people for our own work, you know?
Yes.
And it's so gross and weird, but also we should be better at it.
Yeah.
Yes. It's also like it's also kind of scary. Like, you know, I keep telling, oh, it's okay if you take your time after the because I'm like once it's one of these things where once you get the proposal and, you know, ideally sell it or whatever, then it's sold, and then you actually have to write the book, which is scary because when you're writing, you know, fiction, you're writing it on your own timeline, and you finish it when you finish it, and that's when you submit it. So a deadline is for like a giant piece of work is kind of terrifying.
But it's so cinematic. I feel like any, you know, depiction of a writer in any sort of TV or film is like, oh, I owe this to my editor. Oh, you know, like, oh, I got a meeting.
I know, right?
You know,
I will feel very cinematic, I'm sure. Oh. I'm stressed.
Well, I think that's it. I think we're done torturing you.
Oh, all right. Well, that was not torture at all. That was super fun, actually.
Yay, good. If people want to find more about you, should they go to your website, your Twitter, any and all?
Yeah, either one. The website, which is like, what is it? AmberNoelleSparks.com. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, my Twitter.
At Amber Noel. Always some good stuff.
Definitely.
Increasingly desperate.
Aren't we all?
Oh, definitely.
Yes.
Were you the one that tweeted, I'm tired of making magic for my child every single day in this pandemic. Yes. Somebody else do it for me. Yeah.
There may have been many people that tweeted that, but yes, I definitely tweeted that.
I related to that so hard.
Although my actual favorite thing that was something you tweeted, which I had to like share with my husband, which was the frickin' snack tweet. Like I just fell down the stairs and my kids asked me where a snack was or whatever. Like, yeah. 100%. Like the other day I forget what I was even doing. Was I lighting a candle or something? I don't even remember, but I like hurt myself really bad. Oh, and no. Like literally Izzy came up to me and was like, I'm hungry. Like, do you see that I'm injured? And she was like, yeah, I'm hungry. Can I have a popsicle? Oh my gosh. Kids are just so vicious.
It's I always feel so silly expressing any amount of like pain or sorrow in front of them. Cause I'll think like I'll get some sort of empathy or sympathy from them, but they just kind of look at me like they're watching like a baboon poop at the zoo or something. Like they're just like, yeah. All right, I guess, you know? And I'm like, oh, I really stubbed my toe. Like,
okay. It's like this, like they're mildly embarrassed for you and also just like, don't care.
Yeah, I'm like, I should just keep it to myself.
Exactly.
Okay, anyway, sorry. We'll let you go. Thank you so much, Amber.
Thank you, Amber.
Have a good one.
You too. Right, bye. Amber Sparks, man. She's going to take over the world.
Surprised that ghost book doesn't exist.
I know, she's right. You would think.
Mm-hmm.
There are still gaps, let me tell you.
There are still gaps.
There are. I get emails from time to time from women whose IUDs failed. And they're I was, you know, frantically Googling, like trying to find other, you know, people talking about this, and I couldn't find anything, and I found your because I have an essay about that in the cut,
right. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, dang man, there's still not people talking about this.
Well, maybe even Alyssa was tweeting about the other day, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like, yeah,
poor Alyssa.
Oh my god. I have nothing to add to that at all. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I'm literally staring at the microphone. It's like 1 inch from my face.
You're like, women's issues.
Women, man.
I'm gonna back away slowly.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
You have a Southern accent in my little cosplay of you.
Sure. Just a little diorama in your head, Alex, with the Southern accent.
You're running around a room.
With a Southern obviously accent. Circling Southern accent. Not very quick, though.
Are you still reading, not writing?
I'm still reading, not writing.
Are you still reading?
I finished How to Be Safe.
Yes.
I recommend How to Be Safe. It's excellent. Character. I'm not usually a person that comes away from books thinking about characters. Usually, if I really love a book, it's like, okay, wow, you know, amazing sentences or something else. It's usually not a character, but with this book, I really loved this character of Anna Crawford. It's just, I mean, her name stuck in my head, which is rarely the case. I remember nothing. So How to Be Safe, definitely a great one.
I need to put that on my library holds.
Yes. So I can now I'm reading Tampa by, which is like a hard, it was like a hard 180. So that has been interesting. I'm really enjoying it and just like, kind of like, oh shit.
By Alyssa Nutting.
Yep.
Yeah, I think I read that book in like 36 hours. I just like inhaled it.
Everyone I've talked to that has also read it has said almost the same thing, that they read it in a day, or, you know, oh, my wife read that in a day.
Yeah. I feel like she must have written it in a day because it is so breathless. Like, but I know that's not true. But it is. Yeah, that book's something.
Well, a friend of mine I was talking to him about it, and he said that the thing he liked about it was that it's like one thought unfolding throughout the book. And there's something about that is so, I mean, separate from subject matter, it's like there's something so absorbing about the book because it really does feel like this single thought unfolding and you're just in it the whole time.
Wow. I love that.
Yeah.
Now I need to read it again.
Oh my God.
All her stuff is like that. It's so like sharp and just like so smart.
I've never read her before. This is the first thing I've read.
Oh, wow. She knows the word for everything. It's just like,
yes, it's very exacting prose for sure. Are you still reading the book you mentioned on the last one?
I can't remember what I was reading last time.
There was about the women on the street.
Oh no, I finished that. It's called This Is All I Got by Lauren Sandler. We got to have her on because she's awesome.
You're awesome.
I finished that. It was incredible and also harrowing. I think I used that word last time, but yeah, I finished that. And then I read this book about a serial killer. It was a true crime called American Predator about Israel Keyes. I had never heard of him before.
I don't know Israel Keyes.
Yeah. He killed himself in jail. So I think like his notoriety was muted, but yeah, a true psychopath, gave me nightmares. And now I've never read any Sue Miller. So I'm reading her first book, The Good Mother. And I'm really enjoying that so far. It's this woman going through a divorce. She has a 3-year-old, but it's an interesting structure. And I think I beat myself up for this a lot in that, like, there's not a lot of like forward movement. There's like a little nibble of like something happening. And then like, there's a long, like, and this is something from my past. And this is how I spent my summers as a child. And this is what I was thinking. And I do that as well a lot when I'm writing, and I get so sick of myself doing that, but it's interesting to read this book that is like very much just that.
Mm-hmm.
Like you'll get a little bit like, and then I got the divorce papers and one summer grandpa, blah, blah, blah. It's like,
right. I think that's a workshop meditative anxiety though, for sure. I mean,
could be.
I remember, I mean, I'm not sure for you, but I totally remember getting notes in workshop, things like, yep, haven't earned that flashback yet. Keep going. Or, you know, push it further. Need more forward momentum before it happens. Or, oh, you never should put a flashback here. That kind of feedback, that kind of understanding. Yeah,
rules that you never even would have considered.
Exactly.
Like, where did that come from?
It's like, if it's working, it's working. So, whatever.
Yeah. And I think also like we talked about this a little bit with Matt Salasis, I think maybe, or maybe it was Ruman, I can't remember, but where like you learn how to read the book that you're reading by reading the book, right? Like, how to read the book you're reading as you read it, right?
Oh, like for sure.
The book makes it, gives you the rules, you know?
Absolutely.
And so it's not going to be.
I think that was with Ruman because like that one, I feel like, especially with his book, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So
definitely,
I think as long as you trust where, you know, that the author is like taking you somewhere, you know, then I think which I mean, that's a learned skill in itself. Like what, like an author's confidence or something? Know-how? I don't know.
Yeah.
I actually stopped reading a book. I don't know if I should, because I was really not enjoying it at all. And it has great reviews on Goodreads. It has like, it's in the 4 point something stars and on Amazon.
4 stars.
And it was not good at all. It was not good at all.
Man, say it and then just bleep it.
No, I can't. As a writer, I can't, but I was glad that I stopped reading it and moved on. I learned that from Zach Dodson, by the way.
Oh, shout out Zach.
To just abandon books if you're not enjoying them and move on.
I always do that. I like a page, I'll punt. Easy. I always think of it as punting. I will punt. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's so freeing.
Yeah. I feel like though, usually when I'm reading something, I'm not like just randomly picking stuff up that I'm like, maybe I'll like it. It's like, you know, like 3 or 4 people have told me, oh, you'll dig this, or someone I respect was like, oh, you know, this is great, whatever.
Well, I saw someone talking about it on Twitter, and I think it was someone that I don't remember who it was, so I can't call them out, but I remember seeing it on Twitter and I was like, oh, that book does look interesting. Like, okay. And the premise sounds interesting, but I also saw well, never mind. I was going to say something specific and I will not, but yeah, I usually if I see, and I guess I didn't do it in this case, I usually try to wait until like I've seen someone recommend it like 2 or 3 times. And then I know like, okay, I probably will like this book,
right?
That it was meant to be. But this book I only had heard about from this one random tweet, but that's also true about This Is All I Got, which I loved.
Right.
So sometimes, you know, you win some, you lose some.
Absolutely. The book I think that I didn't know anything about it, and I just saw a tweet about it that I loved, was, I think of this one because I wasn't familiar with the writer until I read the book, was, did you ever read Down City?
By Leah Carroll?
Yeah.
Hell yeah, I love that book. Speaking of true crime.
I went in completely blind, and I'm like, I'm a reader of hers for life. Like, I loved that book so much.
So good.
Oh my God.
Also harrowing.
Oh my God, big time.
I wonder what she's working on right now.
I don't know. Should
give us more, Leah. Do you want to read anything?
I was going to read the opening. There's, I don't know. Speaking of books being recommended to you, there's like that great thing that happens sometimes when a friend will send you a book and be like, oh, you're going to love this. And it's a book you already love. And it's like, it becomes like further confirmation of the friendship.
Yeah.
So my buddy Dan sent me this Hrabal book, I Serve the King of England. Have you read this?
No.
So it's he's a Czech writer. I don't know how to pronounce his first name. I say Bahumil Hrabal. His last name is Hrabal. I'm probably absolutely butchering that.
But
I totally tried. Anyway, this was a writer. We went to Prague a couple of years ago. I had never been out of the country. First place I went was Prague.
That's awesome.
And I asked Dybek, actually. I was like, what should I read? And he's like, you have to read I Serve the King of England. So I read it, and this is one of those books that you read it and you are reminded that you can do anything. It's just like a completely freeing book to read, because it goes absolutely all over the place and you're just with it the whole time. So I was just going to read maybe the first paragraph or two.
I love it.
Cool. So this is the opening of I Serve the King of England that my buddy Dan sent me. And this first chapter is called A Glass of Grenadine. When I started to work at the Golden Prague Hotel, the boss took hold of my left ear, pulled me up and said, you're a busboy here, so remember, you don't see anything, you don't hear anything. Repeat what I just said. So I said I wouldn't see anything and I wouldn't hear anything. Then the boss pulled me up by my right ear and said, but remember too that you've got to see everything and hear everything. Repeat it after me. I was taken aback, but I promised I would see everything and hear everything. That's how I began. Every morning at 6, when the hotel keeper walked in, we were lined up like an army on parade, with the maitre d', the waiters, and me, a tiny busboy, along one side of the carpet, and along the other side, the cooks, the chambermaids, the laundress, and the scullery maid. The hotel keeper walked up and down to see that our dickies were clean and our collars and jackets spotless, that no buttons were missing and that our shoes were polished. He'd lean over and sniff to make sure our feet were washed. And then he'd say, "Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, ladies." And after that, we weren't allowed to talk to anyone.
Wow.
It's great, and right?
It's called "I Serve the King of England."
I served the King of England.
Yeah. I served the King of England. Okay. Yes, please.
Yes, please.
Man, I hope to travel one day.
Right?
I have all these grand plans for post-pandemic, but it's like that.
Do you really?
Well, I do, as if I don't have three children.
Right.
You know? Like, I'm not going to be traveling anytime soon, right?
I think of... No, you're not. I just think of, like, time off of work is my, like... That's what I really, like, get crazy about is, like, okay, maybe I'll take, like, 4 days off here and, like, 6 days off there. And, like, that's kind of where my head's at. Travel seems... I don't know. I just... Yeah, I don't know.
I keep thinking like I want nothing more than to have like a giant dance party with other writers. Like we had at like AWP when it was in DC. Oh man, I should have talked to Amber about this. There was a huge dance party one night and it was like the best like dance party I had ever been to. And I just want to repeat that. Like I want a really good DJ and a really big dance floor and then just like everyone I love just there like you go. Throwing down just once before I die.
Did you get any work done this week?
I did. I got some work done. I got like 2 or 3 days work.
Cool.
But not as much as I did the previous week, but you know, enough.
But you were setting a high bar that previous week.
It's true. I was on top of it. So, yeah.
Did you have something you wanted to read?
Yeah, I was just going to read a little bit from, this is from the perspective of the son who actually does the killing. This is from my novel again. Because I'm selfish and I always read from my work and you're a giver and you read from other people's work.
No, I'm just literally not doing anything. So,
okay. he's in jail and he's in like group therapy and like there's this perky therapist who wants him to talk about, she keeps trying to get him to talk about, you know, the incident and his mother and things. And he, you know, he's sick of that. Anyway, so this is in the middle of him talking. I wanted girls, but I did not want girls like my mother because she made me feel a sort of torture that I know you want me to explain to you, but that I am unable to explain. Okay, fine. I will fucking try. She made me feel like I should duck or put my hands up or back away. And then she made me feel guilty for feeling like that because as my mother, she could see it. She could see that I just wanted out. And I looked into Cece's window because I wanted to know if I could have a damn thought about a girl without worrying the air was going out of me. I wanted to know, was I straight, gay, or nothing at all? And it turns out I am nothing at all. Cece never was naked and she never touched or measured herself. And all I could see was her reading or sleeping or putting stuff away. And she seemed the kind of normal that made my whole world feel like it was going to crash down on my head. And that's what I thought of that morning, how that quiet time in her room was gone for her, gone forever. And that was because of me. He'd stitched the whole thing together from what the other men had said in group, all of them obsessed with their own loneliness, how they were misunderstood or unique because of it, how they did their desperate things because they had no other choice. Riley loved it. It made her feel like she was doing something with her life, making a difference. And Douglas knew now, after so long in prison, that that was all anyone wanted. That he should have found a way to say the things his mother wanted to hear. I love you. You're pretty. You matter. But he was just a child. I was just a child, he said. Even now, he couldn't say them to her because she didn't deserve to hear them. He wanted her to walk away from him and for the floor to open up and swallow her as if she was never there to begin with. He wanted to orphan himself, erase himself, forget himself. I do not want to remember these things, he said. They wouldn't change a thing being remembered. They won't change a thing. He'd written a letter to his father asking why he'd had children with Jackie when it was clear that was a dead end. Really, what he was asking was, did you love me? Do you? And his father never wrote back. He had other kids now. Some people get do-overs. He was standing over Riley now, and she was doing her best to hold her folders in place and keep his eye, to show him that she wasn't scared of him, didn't believe deep down that he was a misogynistic, a word she'd taught them, killer, who she'd pushed too far. Some don't. The other men started to shift and grumble, aware that time was up and they were supposed to move on to the next thing or hear it from the guards. That morning, everyone wanted to know if Jackie told him what to do and when and with what. He kept rubbing his eyes. They felt wrong, like there was a bright light shining just beyond a fog and he was trying to see through all of that. Or maybe that's just how he remembered it now. There were buckets with garden shears and gardening gloves caked in mud, tools hanging on the wall, a rusted rake propped in the corner. His legs ached from crouching so long. He smelled coffee brewing and then the smell died away. He'd given up in the middle of plenty of chores, said fuck this and wandered off. The lawn half mown, the dishes still hot and soapy, his room cluttered and smelling of socks. But he stayed in that garage. He saw it through. If there is one thing I cannot stand, he said, it is my mother's tears. Did she tell him what to do? He tried to remember. He saw her and he saw her mouth moving, saw her weepy face. It had started when he was a boy, so little he didn't even have the words to ask her if she was sad and why. He just knew he'd put a stop to it. He'd make her feel better. My little protector, she'd say, holding him close, her softness, her warmth, all for him. Did she tell him what to do? Probably not. She didn't have to. Again, he was helpless, his hands upturned, Riley backing away from him with her stupid folders against her chest. He didn't want anything from her. Couldn't she see that? He didn't want anything from anyone. She just said, Douglas, he said now. Who did? Riley asked. She was still doing her best to seem like she was in control, but Douglas knew the truth. Your mom or her? But he covered his ears. He closed his eyes. He waited it out. Blood gets in your mouth during something like that. All at once, he realized he'd been trying to see it all from her perspective. All this time, just trying to see himself. It had a tang, and he swallowed it down. That's it.
Jeez.
Or Douglas.
It's been so fun because I think I've said this before, but every time it's like, it's ratcheted up. It's like high pitch, fever pitch. And yet I don't have the connective tissue between all these pieces that you're reading yet. So it's really fun to just kind of like catch the names that are repeating and try and
remember
backwards.
What the hell I'm talking about.
Well, kind of, but in a good way. Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know how much connective tissue there's going to be. Like I was telling my agent, and I don't know if I already said this, but like the structure is going to be like a crazy quilt. Mm-hmm. That's what it feels like to me. I don't know if I already said that, but where you're just like showing the whole with all these different pieces. Did I already say this?
I don't think so. No.
Okay.
You may have said something like that, but you didn't use the quilt.
Yeah. I guess I'm thinking about it because my mother-in-law just made everyone quilts.
Oh, cool.
And they're not crazy quilts, but that's the structure. Like, you know, like you get the whole quilt, but you have to like, you know, you also have to look at each little piece.
Right.
So we'll see.
Awesome.
It's interesting because I have to kind of teach myself how to revise this kind of structure. I don't really know how to revise it. It's very different. Right. So that's fun.
Is what you're reading like, are they mostly what you're thinking of as chapters or sections, or is it not, is that what you have been reading? Has that just been pieces of whatever?
Yeah. I've just been reading pieces of sections, but generally each section is like, you know, a glimpse from some perspective, some point of view. And I don't know, like I have a hard time with like thinking of chapters, even though they're the same thing as sections.
Well, it can be whatever you want them to be. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I have a hard time being like chapter one, chapter two, like that sort of chronology feels not right for this.
Right.
But, yeah, I use tildes, you know, that punctuation mark.
Oh,
tilde.
I thought you were, I literally thought you were using somebody's name and I was like, great. I can't hear. Can't wait to hear what Tilda does. Let's what's the Tilda approach?
Yeah. That's how the sections are broken up with tildes.
Oh, cool. Oh, I see. Cool.
But yeah, so keep on keeping on.
Keep on keeping on.
Have a good week.
I don't know why I'm laughing so much tonight, but all right. Talk to you next week, Tilda. Bye.
Okay. Bye, Tilda.
Bye, Tilda.
I'm a Writer But is recorded by Alex Higley and me, Lindsay Hunter, in our respective basements. Because there's a pandemic out there, please wear a mask. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Editing by Lindsay Hunter. Music by Max Loop.